This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Well, it's been a very dramatic week, and we've seen incredible scenes of people really fighting for their survival. Thousands of people are making this very dangerous journey across the Mediterranean, mostly from the coast of Libya. And two very big disasters this week where overcrowded boats have overturned simply because they just can't deal with the numbers of people, and they're usually very old boats as well.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have the latest details on the recent migrant rescue at sea as they continue to make the perilous journey across the Mediterranean.
Also, the Committee to Protect Journalists has lost its bid to become a recognized NGO at the United Nations. And cholera and chikungunya are overwhelming local health services in Kenya's northeastern region.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, migrant rescues continue to dominate the efforts of Italy's Navy and Coast Guard. Over 10,000 people have been rescued in the stretch of the Mediterranean called the Canal of Sicily, close to Libya, in the past 72 hours. Reporter Josephine McKenna says the Italian government is preparing for an estimated 200,000 migrants this year. She spoke with me about the recent rescues and shared stories of some of the youngest survivors of the perilous journey across the Mediterranean.
Well, it's been a very dramatic week, and we've seen incredible scenes of people really fighting for their survival. Thousands of people are making this very dangerous journey across the Mediterranean, mostly from the coast of Libya. And two very big disasters this week where overcrowded boats have overturned simply because they just can't deal with the numbers of people, and they're usually very old boats as well. We saw around 90 people rescued from one boat, but fears that around 20 to 30 people died on that particular vessel. And the previous day, we had around 540 people rescued, but five bodies were recovered from that particular boat that overturned. So a very big, intense time for the Italian Coast Guard, the Italian Navy, and other European Union vessels and NGOs who are also on deck down there to try and intercept these vessels and try and save people before these boats overturn.
Yes, we've seen some of those pictures, and just to see those people in that kind of a dire situation when you're out in the middle of water like that.
It's hard to imagine, because you think of the Mediterranean as something that's a bit of a holiday playground, not something that is dangerous like the Atlantic or some of those massive ocean waves that you come to expect.
The Italian press has brought stories that have come out of this situation. For instance, a very heartwarming story that involves a 9-month Nigerian girl. Can you tell us about that?
Well, this little girl, her name is Favor, which is such a beautiful name. She's a 9-month-old Nigerian baby. Her mother died on one of the vessels this week when the boat overturned. I think she died of burns from a leakage of oil on the vessel, and she was pregnant at the time. Thankfully, the baby has been rescued. She was taken to Lampedusa, where she received medical treatment and milk and food, and really has captured the hearts of Italians across the country. And there's been this outpouring from people who want to adopt her. And even the Italian doctor who treated her said that he had fallen so much in love with her, he wanted to take her home. She's being transferred to Palermo today on the mainland of Sicily, and she's expected to be taken to a childcare center before being looked after by an Italian family. So we're not quite sure what's going to happen, but she's certainly become the symbol of some of the hardship that we've seen this week and the amazing stories of survival as well.
Some other children have been adopted and their families taken care of. Can you tell us more about those?
Yes, these are not children who were survivors of this week's disasters, but we've heard some amazing stories. A Nigerian baby called Derek, who was delivered in an emergency cesarean, actually, when his mother was on the vessel with him. She nearly died when conflict broke out on a migrant boat. He was born with serious respiratory problems. He survived, and the mother survived, and they later found the father of that baby. And now the family has been reunited and are living in Bari on the Adriatic coast of Italy. In another case, there's a 7-year-old girl from Gambia called Jor, and she arrived in 2013 all alone. She was welcomed and then reunited with her father, who was at a migrant centre in the north of Italy. The father couldn't find work in Italy, and he has had to move to France, where he has found a job, and the little girl is doing well, but she's been staying with a family in Genoa. So she's there as a foster child while her father's working abroad.
Also, I understand a number of children are traveling alone. How is it that they end up getting separated from their families?
Well, it's not clear whether some of these children are simply unaccompanied minors. It seems to be the case where some of them are on the vessels without their parents. They may be orphans, or their families simply can't cope with the number of children in their home countries. So they make the journey on their own to perhaps try and make money or find some means of survival in Italy or elsewhere in Europe.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency says it is upset about the substandard conditions in which refugees and migrants are living in northern Greece and is urging the government to move them to better alternative sites. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Some 8,000 refugees and migrants, mostly Syrians, Afghans, and Iraqis, were moved this week from a squalid makeshift site at Idomeni on the Greek border with Macedonia to several other sites in northern Greece. The UN Refugee Agency agrees conditions in Idomeni were abysmal, but notes the people have been transferred to sites that are also well below minimum standards. UNHCR spokeswoman Melissa Fleming says some people have been packed into derelict warehouses and factories. She says air circulation in these places are poor and supplies of food, water, toilets, showers, and electricity are insufficient.
Obviously, this compounds the distress of the refugee and migrant families, and this is also fueling tensions between the populations, and is also complicating our efforts to provide the required assistance and protection.
The UNHCR is calling on the Greek government to immediately identify and establish new sites that are in full compliance with basic humanitarian requirements. On a related issue, Fleming tells VOA the UNHCR has modified its policy regarding thousands of refugees and migrants in detention centers on several Greek islands. They are forced to remain there while waiting to be processed and sent to Turkey as part of a deal with the European Union. The UNHCR opposes mandatory detention and, as a matter of policy, refuses to assist people being held against their will. But Fleming says her agency is softening this position and has decided to provide aid in these facilities.
UNHCR is, again, present. We are monitoring the situation there. It's very difficult for us to stand by and see people suffering in poor conditions, so we are increasing our assistance inside those facilities.
Fleming says the UNHCR is actively working with the authorities on alternative solutions to detention. She says the UNHCR has had some success in getting the authorities to move vulnerable people, such as the sick, women, and children, out of places of detention and into open facilities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other migrant news, Britain is sending a fifth warship to patrol the Libyan coast and crack down on human and arms smugglers. Prime Minister David Cameron made the announcement at the G7 summit in Japan. Libya's new UN-backed government of national accord has requested international help in improving naval operations. Several estimates say there may be up to 1 million migrants in Libya hoping to get to Europe. In France, prosecutors are investigating a fight yesterday involving 200 Afghan and Sudanese refugees at a camp in Calais known as the Jungle. AFP reports at least 40 people were injured, three seriously. The cause of the brawl is not known, but it began while food aid was being distributed. Also, there's word today that the International Organization for Migration will soon become part of the UN. The Associated Press reports that World Health Organization Chief Dr. Margaret Chan disclosed the news today. The IOM is a 65-year-old organization with 162 member states. It has held permanent observer status at the UN since 1992.
A press watchdog group has lost its bid to become a recognized NGO at the United Nations. The French news agency reports the Committee to Protect Journalists had been trying for the past 4 years to be granted special status that would have allowed CPJ to have access to UN premises and a voice in UN affairs. 10 countries opposed the application, including Burundi, South Africa, and Sudan. Russia and China were also among those voting against the group. Committee to Protect Journalists Executive Director Joel Simon described the vote as sad, especially since the United Nations passes resolutions upholding press freedom.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib. At 16 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Migrant rescues continue to dominate the efforts of Italy's Navy and Coast Guard. Over 10,000 people have been rescued in the past 72 hours. And the Committee to Protect Journalists has lost its bid to become a recognized NGO at the United Nations. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In what Doctors Without Borders is calling a first, two large outbreaks of cholera and chikungunya are overwhelming local health services in Kenya's northeastern region. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
In Kenya's Mandera County, 12 deaths from cholera have been reported since April, in an outbreak that has been ongoing for about 17 months, according to Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF. Almost 800 cases have been reported during this period, concentrated in Mandera Township. Lisbeth Albrecht is MSF's Kenya Country Director.
It is rather devastating in the sense also that it coincides with a parallel confirmed chikungunya outbreak. For us as an organization, it's a first, that means to see two large outbreaks coinciding.
MSF says this is the sixth time in 6 months that it has deployed teams to assist with the cholera outbreak in the northeastern region. MSF notes the Mandera Referral Hospital has been overwhelmed by cholera patients and that health facilities will continue to struggle as chikungunya patients also seek treatment. Chikungunya, a mosquito-borne disease that is painful but seldom fatal, is affecting even medical staff here. MSF suspects about 80% of hospital staff are infected. Kenya's Ministry of Health reports 260 suspected cases of chikungunya in the northeast, with 7 confirmed by laboratory tests. Albrecht urged a better government response at the local and national levels, saying that greater investment in proper water and sanitation for the population is needed. Mandera County's Minister of Health, Ahmed Mohamed, says the government is doing the best it can, especially given Mandera's proximity to both Ethiopia and Somalia.
So we've done quite a lot on our part, but unfortunately, again, especially on the side of the Somali side, there isn't, you know, a strong health system that can be able to handle this kind of infection. So it is like, you know, really, we are fighting a battle that maybe we don't know where the head is.
The Ministry of Health has reported more than 15,000 cholera cases nationwide since the outbreak began in late 2014. Mortality rates are usually low for chikungunya, but severe fever and joint pain mean it can take about a week for patients to recover. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
For the first time in the United States, a patient has been found infected with bacteria that's resistant to antibiotic of last resort. The case is raising fears of the spread of super germs resistant to all known antibiotics. The patient was a 49-year-old woman in Pennsylvania. She was infected with a type of E. coli that was resistant to colicitine, an antibiotic reserved for what is described as nightmarish bacteria. The woman, however, did recover. She had gone to a military clinic last month for a urinary tract infection. It's not known how she became ill. The head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Thomas Frieden, says it's the end of the road for antibiotics unless we act urgently. He warns new antibiotics must be found, warning that the medicine cabinet is empty for some patients.
A U.S. congressional committee heard testimony this week on the Zika virus. The mosquito-borne infection is widespread in Brazil and Latin America and is expected to spread in the United States with the arrival of hot weather. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The House of Representatives Science, Space, and Technology Committee held a hearing called The Science of Zika, the DNA of an Epidemic. Casey Ernst is an associate professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of Arizona. She briefed committee members on the carrier of the virus, the Aedes aegypti mosquito.
It's highly adaptable and highly invasive. It's originally from sub-Saharan Africa, but has been widely dispersed across the globe through the mobilization of people and goods. Aedes aegypti is tightly linked to humans and their activities. It prefers to feed on human blood and lays its eggs in man-made containers in and around homes.
It can breed in just 1 inch of water. During the heat of the day, it rests in shaded areas, in houses or offices, or under vegetation.
It's a day biter, which means that it primarily feeds in the morning and in the afternoon, which means things like bed nets are not as effective as protecting against the diseases that it's transmitting. Not only does this mosquito transmit Zika virus, but it is also a primary transmitter of yellow fever, dengue, chikungunya, and one that you probably haven't heard of yet, which is called Mearovirus.
Ernst says Aedes aegypti is not the only mosquito capable of transmitting the Zika virus.
Aedes albopictus is a relative of Aedes aegypti, which is also capable of transmitting Zika virus, but it can withstand cooler temperatures and it is a more generalist feeder. That means that it doesn't feed as preferentially on humans as Aedes aegypti. Its role in the current outbreak is not well understood at this time.
A female mosquito picks up the virus after biting an infected person. The virus then develops inside the mosquito, possibly for about a week. After that, the mosquito is capable of infecting humans over the next 2 to 4 weeks, which is its typical lifespan. It's not known yet whether it can transmit the virus to its offspring. If so, that would make the threat posed a lot worse. The virus would survive the winter and not have to be reintroduced into the environment. Zika also can be transmitted sexually and by a mother to her fetus. That could result in birth defects, such as microcephaly, which causes abnormally small heads. The virus is also linked to Guillain-Barré syndrome, which can cause partial paralysis. However, only about 20% of infected individuals actually report symptoms, and for most, those symptoms are mild. Daniel Neefsey is Associate Director of the Genome Center for Infectious Disease at the Broad Institute at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University. He says crucial genetic information is still lacking on the Aedes mosquito.
Mosquitoes are not flying hypodermic needles that passively transmit disease. The successful transmission of mosquito-borne disease depends on complex biological and ecological interactions between mosquitoes, their human hosts, and the pathogens that they transmit. Insight into the biology of how Aedes mosquitoes are able to spread disease can be gained through sequencing and mapping the Aedes genome, or the entirety of its DNA.
Such DNA mapping has been done on the mosquito that spreads malaria. Mapping can help scientists discover how mosquitoes taste and smell, and whether they prefer to bite people or animals.
So close behind those smell and taste genes are genes that provide mosquitoes with an immune system. And we know that variation in these genes can determine whether or not mosquitoes are able to transmit pathogens or control infections and not transmit them to the next person they bite.
Normal mosquito controls are being employed against the Aedes mosquito, such as insecticide and elimination of breeding areas. But possible long-term solutions include infecting mosquitoes with the Wolbachia bacteria, which can prevent transmission of Zika. Research is also being done to give mosquitoes genes that prevent them from growing to adulthood, dramatically reducing populations. So far, the only mosquito-borne Zika cases in the U.S. have been among people who travel to Zika disease areas in other countries. African countries have been warned to prepare for a new strain of the Zika virus after an outbreak was reported in Cape Verde. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
El Niño-induced drought decimated this year's harvest throughout southern Africa, and Malawi's government now says the number of people there who will need food aid has tripled to over 8 million. Lamek Masina has more from Blantyre.
The latest figures are a huge leap from the 2.8 million that the government said needed food aid in April when President Peter Mutharika declared the state of national disaster. George Japunda is the Minister of Agriculture. He says the numbers given in April were based on a partial survey, but they have now completed surveys of all the country's 28 districts.
The production of maize during 2014-15 as compared to 2015-16, there was a shortfall of 12.4%. And that as a result of this, if we don't do any action, there will be 8.4 million people affected.
That is about half of Malawi's population. Chaponda says 1.3 million metric tons of maize are needed. He says the government is currently purchasing maize from local traders as well as other countries like Zambia. Food security activist Tamani Nkono says the country will need international funds.
If you look at the cost of doing that, it should be in the range of 250 to 300 billion Malawi kwacha. So I don't think government has that kind of money to do the importation.
The figure he cites is equivalent to between 360 million United States dollars and 430 million United States dollars. So far, the U.S. and the Chinese governments have donated the money, but the UN relief agencies warn that without rapid action, food shortages throughout Southern Africa will continue to worsen into early next year. The International Federation of Red Cross says the number of food insecure people in the region may climb as high as 49 million. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa. On VOA.